If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Everywhere we go, people want to know who we are and where we come from. So who are you and where did you come from?
Yeah, my name is Daryl Carl, and I'm from Darndale originally, but I actually live in Clarehall now. So,
how long were you living in Darndale?
I grew up, well, I lived in Kilbarrick for the first 2 or 3 years of my life. And then we moved up to me, my mum, my dad, my little brother Lee. We moved up to Darndale then when I was, 2 or 3. And then lived there up until only about 2 months ago.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Whereabouts?
Borecup Avenue.
All right. Yeah. Do you know what? I had to go down to a funeral. Barbara Hunt died, and I had to go down to a funeral, like to Barbara's funeral in the house, and I couldn't find it.
No.
Like, I couldn't.
Oh, it's a maze, it is. It's a maze. And it actually used to be even worse because there was a lot of laneways, alleyways, and stuff. And yeah, they switched it around a bit, but it is a maze, yeah.
So, I was driving around for ages, and then I remember stopping some young fella, and I think he was in the middle of something, but he was like, come on, I'll bring you. And like, my friends were ringing me going, where are you? And then when I was coming out of it, I got so disorientated. I was just coming down to Belcamp to go into the courts. You know the way you can go down that way?
Yeah.
And I said to my friend, I said, where are we? And she goes, are you for real? She said, that's the courts there. But I just couldn't, because I just came out of Darndale so quick.
Yeah, yeah. No, even my friends, like one of my friends in particular, he comes into me all the time and he still gets lost because there's a couple of different turns into my estate and he finds it hard getting into Borecup.
What was it like growing up in Darndale?
I loved it.
Did you?
Yeah, no, it was great. I had quite an active childhood. Like, thankfully enough, I wasn't the generation with the phones and the games and streaming and stuff. You were outside, you were playing, you were just getting up to no good at times and just messing around with the lads. I was always, probably in around my area anyway, I would have been known for the horses. I was pestering my, since my mum actually said that one of the first words that I said was, can I have some, about the horse money? Because I used to love to, remember the old 20p's with the horse on them?
Yeah.
And I used to always say, oh, horse money, horse money. And then I used to watch horse racing with my granddad, and I was just horse obsessed. Then I used to go in all the time. I'd see the lads outside on the horses out in the field and stuff, and I'd go in, Ma, will you buy me a horse? Will you buy me a horse? And she says, how are you going to pay the vet bills and all this, that? And she just, I think once I got to about 15, I went in and there was a horse for it. A young fella was selling a horse out in the field, and he was looking for €250 for it. And I said to me, Ma, ran in, I was like, Ma, will you buy me this horse, please? Buy me the horse. And she says, what are you going to do? How are you going to look after him? Blah, blah. I was like, Ma, I'll make it work. I'll make it work. So I went outside then, and she called me back in. She was like, look, your dad's going to give you the money. But because all my mates had horses, I was the only one without a horse. And me Ma said, look, your dad's going to give you the money, but this is your Christmas present. And I was like, yeah, I don't care. So I bought the horse, and I only had that for probably, I'd say, 3-4 weeks. And I used to keep it out in my back garden at night time because I was afraid I'd get pounded.
Yeah.
And then one day my dad went mad. He was like, that horse is pounding all over the garden. He says, get that out into the field. And the first night I left it back out in the field, got pounded.
No.
Yeah. I went over to my mate's house and he was like, my nickname is Gibbo. He says, Gibbo, your horses have to get pounded. All the lads' horses have to get pounded. And I ran over to the field and I ran up onto the hill, looked over and they were gone. And I ran back to me gaff crying and I ran in. It was like, it's your fault. You told me to get it out. But Yeah, I loved it. It was horses or...
Where was it? So, like, obviously, is it down to the lake and down to Midafish is on that lake, right? So I know the lake, but... So where were the horses kept?
They were down by... Do you know Wallace's down the back roads?
Yeah.
Literally just in them all them fields. Even sometimes I would have tied them up to the bottom of... tied my horses up to the bottom of the field near Wallace's in the Darndale Park.
Do you know, like, that's the best statement I've ever heard, is that all my friend has horses. I was the only one without a horse.
I literally was me mad, because I don't know, well, there was obviously a good few of us, but the ones that were into the horses, they all had horses. The one, like, I was the only one that was into the horses that didn't have a horse, so.
And do you know what, like, when I seen the horses, like, I always pitied the horses, because I thought they weren't taken care of.
Well, I have seen that growing up. I've seen people, like, abuse horses and stuff, but I was always, and I'm not just saying this, but I was always, like, the horses were a passion of mine. I end up, like, going even further with the horses in the future. But
so tell me that. So you went into your dad, you cried your eyes out. Yeah. What did your dad say?
I can't remember, to be honest. Yeah. I know I was going mad. And he was like, well, what do you fucking expect, bleeding? Probably all that, you know what I mean? Yeah. He was like, you can't keep a horse out the back garden. It needs to be in a field or in the stables. And I remember, because that was my Christmas present, and this was probably in the summer. Mm-hmm. He gave me money then on Christmas Day, and he gave me €500, and I went out. It was either Christmas Day or the day after Christmas Day, and I bought a horse off my friend for €350, and I had him for a while now. But yeah, I've had probably, I'd say, up in around 10 horses like growing up in Darndale, and most of them got pounded. Some of them I sold, but yeah, no, I always looked after my horses. I was always, even my friends, you do see people that have mistreated horses, and I have seen it, but I don't like it, and it wouldn't be me, so.
And then you said there you went further into the horses.
Yeah, so, I was always interested, like, all growing up, I always wanted to be a jockey, and I reached out to a trainer out in Lusk. His name was Adrian McGuinness, and... He does well. He probably only has, well, at the time, he only had 20 to 30 horses, race horses in, and he got a good handful of winners every year. He was a flat trainer, so just like, you know, flat and jumps. Mm-hmm. He was a flat trainer, so all his horses were flat horses. And I reached out to him, and he said, yeah, come on up to me. And I went up to him, and he taught me a lot. He basically got me to a level where I was able to ride race horses around the gallop, and the first race horse I ever galloped on, like sprinted on, was one of his horses. And
how does it feel sprinting on a horse?
Well, it's mad, because like horses growing up around the estate, I'd went as fast as I could on any of them. Mm-hmm. But when you get on a race horse, it's a different kettle of fish. Like, I remember the first time I ever went on a race horse. I remember, so it was like a... The gallop was shaped like the number 9.
Okay.
So you go around the circle, and then at the end you sprint up the straight. So we done that. You do, what, like 2 or 3 laps of the circle, and then they're probably like probably the best part of half a mile in length. But the first time, a horse called Semi home, and I remember I was nervous. I was breaking it. And Ado says, do 2 laps and then follow on up the straight, and give him a slap down the shoulder with your whip. So we done that anyway. And I remember I literally let the reins go on the horse, just like let them out, hit him a slap down the shoulder with the whip. And he took off, and his legs, I'll never forget it, his legs stretched so far out in front of me that I was like, whoa. And then it was like my eyes were watering. It was just like... Do you ever see the Fast and Furious movies when they press the nuts in the car and then everything just shoots past? That's what was happening. I just like, boom. And then as we got to the top of the gallop then, because he was going so fast, and he was hard to stop. And I was nearly crying trying to stop him. I was going towards, like, there was like a big fence at the bottom of the gallop. And I was like nearly crying. I was like, oh, he's not going to stop. He's not. But he did.
Terrifying.
Yeah, but it was great.
Yeah.
After that then, I stayed with Ado up until it was about 18. Reached out to a few racehorse trainers over in England, because there's more horse racing over in England, more meetings every day or every week, and there's a better chance of becoming a jockey over there. So,
you're too tall though, no?
No, everyone thinks that, but it's about the weight. Like you could be 7 foot. Well, 7 foot would be a bit stupid looking, but yeah. you could be. It's just all about your weight. You know what I mean? I have like some of my best friends over in Wales now are jockeys, and they're probably only a couple of inches smaller than me. So, I moved over to Wales and over to Peter Bowen. Worked for him for 2.5 years, and I actually raced one of his horses in Point of Points. It's like amateur races.
Right.
I raced twice on a horse called Umbrody House. And then the second time I ever raced a horse, I was sitting in the tent, like the little jockey's tent. And me ma, me dad, me nanny, granddad all came over. And I remember the rain was bouncing off the roof, and I was sitting there, I was nervous, and I was like, oh, Jesus, it's pissing out. Like, I was dreading it.
Mm.
And then, hopped up onto the horse, went down to the start, and the race kicked off then. And because of the muck, I jumped 3 jumps and I had 2 pairs of goggles on. And because it was raining and there was muck getting kicked up into my face,
mm.
I pulled down the 4th pair of goggles after 3 jumps. And bear in mind, I was 18 jumps in this race. It was a 3-mile race, and yeah, after 3 jumps, couldn't see a thing, pulled the 4th pair of goggles down, probably 2 or 3 more jumps, couldn't see on my 2nd pair, and I was going blind into the jumps, and when I went past the crowd then, my horse hit the jump. I was just an absolute amateur.
Mm.
You know, the fact that I could see as well, it was just a recipe for disaster. I ended up on the horse's neck, managed to stay on. And then I pulled up the horse, stopped, and the race continued while I walked back in. And
what does it do to you in that moment when you land on his neck?
It's just survival mode at that stage. Like, you're just trying to, you're not, I don't know, like, I've had falls off horses where you're bracing yourself. You can, like, you're hanging off the side of the horse, and the horse moves away from you a different direction, and you're like, right, boom. You tense up, boom, fall onto the ground. Sometimes you have to curl in a ball, so doesn't stand on you, or less mm-hmm. chance of him standing on you or kicking you in. But in that situation, sometimes it happens so quick that you're just clinging on, or you're trying to pull yourself back up. Or
your ma must have been terrified.
Oh, I was disappointed. I was because they came over to see me and for it then like that. But when I was walking back in on the horse, the girl that was leading me back in, She was like, oh, you were doing well up until then. And I says, yeah. I says, I couldn't see a thing, Ginny. Her name was Ginny.
Mm-hmm.
I says, I couldn't see a thing. And I was choking. I was gagging on muck because there was so much muck in my mouth. Yeah, so after that, I was like, no, I'm done with this. So I gave up the horses then.
Did you?
Yeah. It just wasn't for me. I broke bones falling off horses. And I've seen horses take heart attacks on the gallops, going up the gallops with people left. 30 to 40 miles an hour, taking heart attacks and dropping. I've seen mad stuff with horses, and yeah, I was like, yeah, it's not for me.
Because it is pretty horrific when you are watching a race and then like you yeah. see a horse, and then if you see a horse die
or break its leg, that's yeah. horrific to watch. I'm yeah.
telling you. That's it's not nice. Like, and I do wonder. Like, my brother was a jockey down in the Curry years ago.
Yeah,
and years ago, bless him, but he had massive faults, and he'd break bones and everything. And then I think one day he fell off the horse and nothing happened to him. But that was it. He walked away. Yeah. He couldn't do it.
It gets to that state. Even sometimes, I knew for a long time that I probably hadn't got the bottle for it. But
do you think, though, it's the bottle? I don't think. I think you're being unfair on yourself, do you?
The thing is with me, I was always quite an anxious person. So there'd be times when I was nervous on horses that most people, like jockeys, wouldn't have been nervous on. I think it was my bottle, to be honest. Some people it's not the case, but for me it was definitely the case. And I think I was always a good judge on a horse, good judge of pace, good judge of a horse was in form. I told my boss many a times that this horse is going to win next time, and I went and won. I was always a good judge, I was actually, without being cocky about it, I was very good, very... I'd say if my bottle hadn't gotten in the way, I probably would have been good with horses. Because even, I think, riding horses, for example, my bottle probably held me back from improving, whether it's going over jumps or just doing, like, just, yeah, just riding the more difficult horses. And, yeah, my bottle definitely held me back from improving on the horses. And But I definitely had a good spark with horses. Like,
do you regret it? Like, or do you think back on?
I loved it. Mm. I love the memories, the Welsh, the days out I've had, the memories. Yeah, everything about it. It's all great, except, yeah, I just hadn't got the. I just said to myself, look, I'm not going to make a career out of this, and I don't want to be riding racehorses for £350 a week.
Mm.
It's risking my life. It just wasn't for me. So,
what's your mandate, say to you?
Again, I was a bit disappointed because I know they were very proud of me living over in Wales, and especially my dad. My dad, he was always interested to hear about how I was getting on, and my first ever race, I only found out the day before that I was racing the next day, and my dad ended up coming over, getting the boat over last minute by himself just to see me. So, yeah, no, I'd say they were a little bit disappointed, but again, they're the type that just want to see me happy, do you know what I mean? So,
but you must have had some spirit, because I'm not being funny, but I can say this because I'm from Ofew, but people don't expect us to do well. They don't expect, you know what I mean? Like, I had a friend, not a friend, like I said this before, a guy came up to me, he was like, hey, Rebecca, he's like, I can't believe your news. And I was like, what? He's like, I heard the most amazing thing about you. I was like, about me.
Yeah.
And he was like, yeah. He was like, you're from Darndale. He was like, and look at you now. And I was like, not from Darndale, I'm from Ofew Court. So I was like, but what you mean?
Nah, yeah, that I do hate that. It's just, it's like, even, I don't know, it's just different people, like, just different estates, different, you could be 5 minutes down the road from someone, but completely different in your upbringing, do you know what I mean? And different mindsets, everything, all that type of stuff. So, I actually find that, just from the people I've met throughout my life and experiences though, I actually find that the places like, say, Mofew, Darndale, all them type of locations, they're the ones that they always stick together.
Mm.
Tough times, community, all that stuff. Like, when my brother died, for example, we walked out into the garden and my whole road was standing there with blowing to let them off, do you know what I mean? Would you get that? Like, you probably would get it in some parts of states, but most people now, I don't think you would. You wouldn't get that community in.
Mm.
The council estates, there's great community in them. There's a lot of chaos as well in them now, but they're great people. Just a lot of hard people. Hard people that have had a hard life, but great people.
So tell me about your brother.
Yeah, so it was September, just gone. September last year. He went. So the last time I actually seen him was the Saturday. I walked into the sitting room and he was lying down, and he had a tea whitener in, and he was actually, the last time I seen him alive was how he looked when he was sleeping like he was in the coffin. He was lying there with his tea whiner in. And I thought, because how he was, he was lying on the ground and I could only see his legs when I walked past the sitting room door, and I went over and I was like, looked at him. I seen he had his tea whiner in. I was just, I says, oh, you got your tea whiner in? And he just nodded his head to say, yeah. I gave him a thumbs up and then I walked off. Went out, done whatever I was doing, probably out to friends or out to my girlfriend. And then I went on to Instagram and he had a story up that he was cycling out to Nice. So he cycled from Darndale out to Nice. He was really into his cycling. And went out, took a picture with the Nice ball. Do you know that big ball with the road markings on it? Took that picture, stuck it on Instagram, and he says, sorry, one sec.
He stuck
up the caption with that picture saying, enjoy the little things, the nice things. And then he stuck up another story then a while later, and he was cycling back down the motorway on the hard shoulder.
Oh, Jesus.
I know. And I replied to him with a laughing face, and he just liked it. He never replied to me, he just liked it. And then I didn't see him at all then. We just, however we were in the house, if I was in the house, he wasn't in the house that night or whatever, we just didn't cross paths again.
Tell me a little bit about him. Was it, he seems like he was mad.
No, do you know what? He was an introverted extrovert. He was crazy, hyper, loud, but shy and anxious, and introverted extrovert. That's what he was. And he was like, do you know when people dying are like, oh, he was a lovely person, but look, my brother Robert was a lovely person.
He must have been into himself. Was he doing his teeth whitening and stuff like that?
Yeah, well, he was very, like I said, introverted growing up, and he went out to his friends every now and then. And thank you.
Just water, George, water, have that as well.
So I think over time, he started coming out of a shell. One second.
Go on.
He started coming out of a shell, and he had met this girl. He went away to Barcelona, where literally like probably 2-3 weeks before he died, and he was just his hair was looking great. He had that like Leonardo DiCaprio type hair, do you know what I mean? And good head of hair. He was tan, because he just back from holiday, tea winers, and he was looking well. He was feeling well, and I don't know, there was something about him. He was on a high. He was loving life. And then, so he went out to Saturday night, out to watch, I think it was the Anthony Joshua fight, or Tyson Fury. It was one of them. It was a big heavyweight fight, anyway. He went in to meet the lads in the living room in town. And after that, they went to a house party in, what's the name of that place?
Ballybock, don't we know?
No, it's over towards, it's not too far from the Black Forge.
I know what you're talking about,
I can't even think now, but yeah, over by that direction, he was over there. And so he was at the party, and I think at 2 o'clock then, he left the party, he said to his mates, oh, I'm going to head home. So he went home, and he left the party, and the next thing we knew, we found out the next morning. So what we think what happened was, and I don't think any of my family think it was suicide, and we're not naive, do you know what I mean? Like, if we did think it was suicide, we'd say it.
Mm-hmm.
But what we think happened was, because he was such a clumsy drunk, we think he went down into the canal, went down for a PISS, and we think he fell in, and the fact that he was drunk, cold water, darkness, uneven ground, all them factors just played a part. And I think a young man there, I don't know how old he was, but the guard said he was a young man, was going up the canal then the next morning on a canoe, and he saw something float in the water, so he went over. So it was my brother, and then shouted up to the women walking past, run into the fire station, there's a dead body here, blah, blah, blah. So they end up going in. Yeah, and then they found my brother. So I found out then on the Sunday around 2 o'clock, I was dropping my girlfriend home, and then I was going to collect my nanny because she was coming over to the house for food. My ma was meant to be making dinner, but my ma wasn't making dinner that day. She woke up, and it was a weird vibe off her. It was just weird how it all happened. I was like, are you not bringing Nanny over, man? She says, yeah, I am. She was like, we're just getting Nanny France.
Yeah.
Funny enough, we were around talking about, but she's like, we're just getting Nanny France. And I said, right then. So I dropped Casey off, about to head up towards me Nanny. But just before Casey got out of the car, actually, my mum's boyfriend rang me. And he was like, Daryl, have you got an updated picture of Robert?
Take your time.
I knew straight away. I didn't ask any questions over the phone. I knew straight away. And I was like, why do you want an updated picture of Robert? And I could hear my man in the background saying, Daryl, the guard are here. Just send it. So I hung up the phone. Said to Casey, get out of the car, get out of the car. She was like, why, what's up, what's up? And I said, I think Rob's dead. And she's like, what? What are you saying that for? I said, get out of the car, Case, will you? Get out of the car. So she walked into a house and I flew home. And as I was driving up to Clare Hall Road, I was bawling my eyes out. And I rang his twin brother, Eamon. I rang Eamon and I says, Eamon, I think Rob's dead. And he was like, what are you saying that for? What are you saying that for? And I was like, look, he's either really badly injured, he's in trouble, or he's dead. He said, the guard are at the gaff looking for an updated picture of him. And then I flew on, like, I mean, I couldn't get home quicker. One of the lads seen me drive into Darndale, and he says he knew something was up, because he said, oh, you flew into Darndale. I ran into my kitchen then, and the guard was standing there, and I says, is he dead? And they says, look, we found a bank card. We found a body in the canal, and there was a bank card in the pocket, belonged to Robert Cal. I just ran out to me hall crying. And then I ran back in. I said, was he murdered? They were like, no, we don't think so. We think it was an accidental death. And then I ran upstairs. Then I rang me nanny, rang me brother Aimo, and I says, yeah, he's dead, Aimo. And Aimo just bawled his eyes out on the phone.
Was he? Where was Eamon?
Eamon was, so he lived down in Ashbourne at the time. And he was, I think he was driving over this direction. And so I rang him the first time. He was probably on his way over. And then the second, he arrived at the house probably about 5-10 minutes afterwards. After I rang him and he came in then. And yeah, so that was tough. Aimo, because he's his twin, Aimo found it tough. Aimo the whole week was just shaking. He was in bits, he was shaking. And to be honest with me, I was heartbroken, I was in bits, but I was very, I don't know, I was cold with my emotions. I remember one of his mates, Aaron. Now, Aaron's a lovely bloke, I love Aaron to bits, but just after finding out that now, was your head's all over the place. And I remember Aaron walked into my garden, we found out at 2 o'clock, to say between 4 and 6, or give or take. Aaron walked into the garden with another one of his mates, and I was standing talking to my mates, because my mates came up to me when they found out, and Aaron walked in, he says, he was crying, and he was like, Darrell, is it true, is Rob dead? And I says, yeah, I says, he's dead, he is. And Aaron probably probably to this day doesn't know this, but I was interrogating him in that garden. I was asking him loads of questions. And
was he with him?
He was with him in the party. And I think he was the last person that was talking to Rob. I'm nearly sure, because he said, do you want me to go with you? And Rob was like, no, I'm just going to hop in the taxi and head home, blah, blah, blah. And so I was interrogating him. I was saying, who was with him? Was anyone fucking... I was asking loads of questions. Was he fighting anyone? The arguments? Was he doing drugs? Trying to find out everything. I was like, why didn't you go with him, Mark? I was like, I said it to him. He says, no, he wanted to go. He says, you stay and enjoy your night. He says, I'm just going home to bed. And I was like, I swear to God, the whole time I was talking to Aaron, and Aaron's a lovely bloke, he was great to me, Mark, to me family throughout the funeral. He's even to Rob, he was a great friend to Rob, but just because you're in that mindset, I was looking at him in the garden, interrogating him, and if he had slipped up and said one wrong thing, I was saying in my head, grab him up against the car. And well, I'm glad I didn't. It was just, I was cold. My head was all over the place.
But when you have a situation where they should have went home with him, or they didn't go home with him, or for whatever reason, that's different to somebody just, you know, it is different that, you know, he was with people and he was alone. Mm. Why was he alone?
Mm.
And that's where your resentment was kicking in there.
Yeah, your mind plays tricks on you when things like that happen. You just don't know who you can trust. I was like, did his mates do something? To be honest with you, I actually thought one of his mates done something to him. I was like, only for the guard, like, I know the guard says we think it was an accidental death and stuff, but, like, that day, like, my mind was playing tricks. I was like, does he have to have been fucking, one of his mates do something, or did he have an overdose in the house and his mates fucking done something to the body just to fucking cover it up? Or I was like, I don't know. I was just, my head was all over the place.
My friend, I won't say her name here because she's gone through it as well, but the exact same thing. It was the girlfriend and some friends. He went home and now he died.
Mm.
But they're saying, oh, he went home and he killed himself. And she's like, I don't think he killed himself. Yeah. She's like, I don't think he killed himself. And she's going through the exact same emotions as you, but even further, she's like, did you have a fight with him? Did you, one of you say something to him? Something. And she thinks there's something more sinister involved.
Well, to be honest with you, I think a lot of the time you need to trust your gut feeling. And you'd be surprised, like, the amount of things that happen in the world. And for a friend to do something like that, there'd be no surprise. And that's another thing. Like, I said this to my girlfriend. I said, you know what? Not one time was I surprised. I promise you, not one time was I surprised he died. It's just like, life doesn't surprise me anymore. Nothing in life surprises me. Even when I found out my brother Eamon was having a kid, found out 2-3 weeks after Rob died, found out his twin brother was having a kid, and I cried. And it wasn't because I was happy or sad or... Well, I was sad. I was sad because the first thing that popped into my head was, my brother won't be there for it. But... the gender reveal and everything. I find it hard to feel emotions now.
Did you feel that life was moving on without Rob?
Nah, well, all our lives did move on, and we have to, do you know what I mean? We can't, if we just stay in the same place, we'll put ourselves in the grave, do you know what I mean? And obviously it eats us up and it comes in waves, but Amo, after, I think a week after my brother died, Eamon went over to Lanzarote, because my dad lives in Lanzarote now, and he went over to Lanzarote for two weeks, and they came back, and that's when they said they were, Jessie said she was pregnant, but I don't know, I just, Eamon found that tough, so he was sort of glad for him that he has a baby to focus his mind on, but I just think... when I found out he was having a kid, me mind is delighted for them, and I can't wait to meet the baby, I can't wait to hold it. But the gender reveal, found out they were having a boy, and I was like cheering, I was like lovely, I was like delighted for them. But my stomach wasn't getting them butterfly feelings, my mind can think things, but my body can't feel it, you know what I mean? So
it's mad what life does.
Yeah.
Like that baby being a boy. When is he due?
7th of July.
Okay.
But that's the thing, because my brother's favourite, my brother Rob, his favourite colour was blue. And, even we have like a thing with his ashes and stuff in the house. It's like a big glass like cabinet. And we have a blue neons around it, with pictures and all the little niggly bits from him. We have a lock of his hair and stuff in it, and that's blue. And blue, for like 2021, the second half of 2021, my life was like, blue was a big thing in my life, the colour blue, because just my whole house, me sitting room in particular, was like decked out in blue lights, blue everything, just for Rob. And then when we found out, the blue popped, came out of that balloon, it was a coincidence. But yeah, no, I'm delighted for them having a baby, but I just wish for myself I could start feeling emotions again, but I'm sure probably over time I'll come back.
And you don't ever get over it, you don't ever get through it, but like, those emotions will start coming, I say, when you see the baby.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Yeah, definitely. And I love kids as well. I've been told many a times that I think I'm going to be a good dad. And I can see even with my girlfriend, like my girlfriend mothers me, you know what I mean? So she's going to be a good man. And I look forward to having kids myself, but just when the time's right, obviously. But yeah, it's weird, because the thing is with Rob, it was a slow burner. So because I always thought, he's walking around my house a couple of weeks later, I was like, he's in work. And then I remember I was lying on the couch before, and I said to myself, I was thirsty, I wanted a fizzy drink, and I went to get my phone to text Rob to get him to bring a bottle of Coke home on his way home from work. And I was like, he's not here, and things like that, triggers and stuff. But
how does that hit you?
When it hits me, it hits me hard. Like I said, it's a slow burner. So most of the time I thought he was in work or he was out of the house, and then certain things will trigger me and I'll cry. Or even me missus, like me and me missus, only probably 3-4 nights ago, we were lying in bed and we were chatting about Rob, and I was telling her about the counselling session, and the two of us, I basically cried myself to sleep that night. And Casey beside me as well, she was bawling her eyes out and just a slow burner.
Like, see, your emotions are there.
Yeah.
But it's just you're so caught up in grief.
Yeah.
That your emotions are there. They're clearly there.
No, they are. But yeah, I can see
but
what you
you're
mean.
Just this. You're just here in this cloud, and that's you're going to stay there for a while.
Yeah.
And that's all right. Until you can come out of it.
That's my emotions definitely are there, but it's just excitement, happiness, they're the emotions
that's
that
okay.
I should, yeah.
And
I
that's
am.
Okay.
It is just grief, isn't it? So. Mm.
And that's okay, and you can stay there for a year, you can stay there for 2 years.
Mm.
Do you know what I mean? And you have to, if you have to, you have to.
Yeah. That's all. I've been working on myself as well. So even like I was telling you before the podcast, so one of my friends said to me, what was harder, the loss of your cousin or the loss of your brother? And I think the only reason he had, obviously, like, my brother lived with me and I seen him every day, you'd think that'd be harder, but I think, so my mate said to me, yeah, what was harder, your cousin or your brother? And I says, oh, come here, look. The way I explained it was, they were like two hot drinks, tea and coffee. Both are hot drinks, but taste different. My cousin, JJ, he was a traumatic death, and that hit me instantly because I didn't see him every day, and I knew when I got the phone call, I knew he was gone. Whereas with my brother Rob, I always sort of seen him around. I always thought he would have been in the house or out with his friend.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Friends are in work, so it only hit me every now and then that Rob was gone, but John John was instantly, so.
And when did John John die?
2017.
Okay.
Yeah, John John, do you know, like, even the papers and stuff, they said a lot of nasty things. The papers confirmed to me after my cousin John John that I'm like, oh, I don't believe bullshit I read. It's really, they put stuff in the papers that I was like, this is mental, like, this isn't true. I knew John John. John John told me everything. If I chatted John John, me and him were sitting down having a drink, I asked John John any question, he'd tell me. So obviously I don't really want to get into the the details of what happened, but I'll long story short, he actually got killed because of someone else's beef, by association. He was friends with people, he was set up and he got shot. That was hard. No, that I think I was always a bit anxious and stuff, but it was always quite, especially social media, like I always loved to be silly on Instagram stories, to be honest with you, I always wanted to be famous growing up. I always wanted to be famous, but I think after John John died, that's when my mental health started really decreasing.
How old was he and how old were you?
He was 28, I was 25.
Okay.
And, yeah, me and him were close, growing up, he would have been the cousin that I stayed with every weekend, and I'd only started really getting close to him again because obviously I lived in Wales, and I really started getting close to him again probably the year before he died. And the last time I actually seen him, we were in a night out in the cafe bar, and he lived over in Lucan, so he gave me his key and he says, will you drop my car up to me tomorrow and get Amo to follow you out and drop you back? And I says, right. So he was driving an Audi, so I flew out to Lucan in the Audi, and I went out and he was sitting out his ma's back, out my auntie's back, and I gave him the key and I said, John, that's some car. It was the first time I'd driven a car like that. I was like, that's some car, John. You put the bleeding pedal down and it kicks in and you're
like being back on a horse.
Yeah, literally, exactly like that. And I was like, great car. And so we were chatting about the night out before and stuff, and then I gave him a little handshake and said, see you later. And he used to always call me cuz are there. He'd be like, I'll see you later, cuz, I'll see you later. And I left him then, and a couple of weeks later, then he was shot. He was actually shot in the car that I drove up to him.
Wow.
Yeah, so that was very, like, that hit me like a ton of bricks. I was paranoid. I was literally, there was loads to it, you know what I mean? It's like, even myself, like, I just didn't know who I could trust. And I knew a lot of details about the situation, and even some of his friends, like, do you know what I mean? I don't want to go into detail.
No, obviously don't.
Some people that you think you can trust, you just can't.
Mm. And then the trust issues and all start to play on you then, in your mind with everything, or?
Yeah, and that's when I started really decreasing with my mental health. And
in what way?
So I started getting more introverted, and then I was like, there was like a big shadow of me, and there was anger and stuff in me. And I remember I actually got sacked out working in the airport before because John was September as well, September 18th. And I got sacked out of the airport because 2 months later I was in work, and I was just in a weird headspace. Even after Rob, I was in a weird headspace. I could have killed someone, like, had anger in me. And I walked into work one day, and one of the lads was taking the piss out of me, and he was talking about McGregor getting shot because he hit that gangster, apparently, like, in the pub. And he was like, bang, bang, McGregor's getting shot. And he knew I was a huge fan of McGregor. So he's like, bang, bang. And I ended up losing the head. And I battered him. And I won't say his name, but he was one of my close mates in the job. I bought him smokes that week and all because he was waiting to get paid. He was one of my close mates, and I just had anger in me. And I battered him, and I got sacked. Then, like, after that, then I was paranoid. I was like,
when you did that to him,
how
did you feel then when you realised that you did that to him?
I've had anger issues a good bit growing up. To be honest, I'm surprised I never got in trouble over my anger issues. But straight after, like, once I calm down, once my adrenaline goes, I do feel like a prick. I swear to God, even people I don't like. I hate losing my temper, but sometimes, when I say I go tunnel vision, I just go tunnel vision. And I text them and all afterwards, and he wrote me back a bit of abuse saying I hit my sly dig and stuff. It wasn't a sly dig, but he said it was a sly dig, and I wasn't, you know, I just had my hands up and was like, look, sorry, like, I fucking...
Yeah, because you have to accept that you did that.
Yeah, no, 100%. Mm. And to be honest, I loved the bloke, and even if I seen him now, I'd love to... I don't think he'd want to speak to me now, but I'd love, like, he was a great bloke. He's a lovely bloke.
Mm.
Even now, if I was only telling my counsellor that if a kid comes up to me and does bang, bang with that, it triggers me. It doesn't, like, I'm not going to start battering a kid, but it triggers me. Things like, and even walking past a canal or walking past a stream triggers me with my brother, you know what I mean? Things trigger you. And unfortunately, it was too close to home that my friend in the job, I suppose, was triggered me about guns, and I just snapped and I threatened him, and he laughed, and then I walked over and just done what I done. So that's just things like that. After that, then
between what happened there and then between Rob's death, did you see counselling?
No, I needed it though. I definitely needed it. In around John's death, I was partying a lot. I was doing a lot of drugs. Ears, coke. On weekends, I was actually taking steroids as well at the time.
God.
Yeah, I was. And I was taking steroids, doing 5 days Monday to Friday in the gym, going out on the weekend, getting out my head and knees up and open rights. And I mean, my head was on. There was times where I walked into one of my friends, Calvin. I walked into Calvin one of the days and we was chilling on the bed and I literally cried my eyes out in his arms. And I remember one day I had an argument with my ma and this was before I actually got sacked out of the airport. I was working in the airport and I was starting at 3 or 4 in the morning and I had to leave. So I had an argument with my ma, say about 12 o'clock. And I was like, right, I'm not going to bed, like I'm staying awake. Lying on the couch crying I was. Got in the car to go to work. Say if it was at 3 o'clock, I probably left at like 1:30 or whatever time it was in the night. And I was driving up the N32 and I was bawling my eyes out. And I promise you, this was one of the scariest things. It was like an out-of-body experience. It was like on my left, there was a me. Do you know the devil and the angel on the shoulder? Mm. That's why I actually have the devil and the angel tattooed on the back of my head. So one whispering into one ear, the other whispering into the other ears, because I was driving up that N32 and it was weird, like the most out-of-body experience I've ever had, where it was like two of me arguing and I was watching it and one was like, kill yourself, come on, kill yourself, and the other one was like, what are you saying this for, and I was bawling my eyes out driving up the road and I was debating just fucking stop staring, and I just didn't, and I went into work and all.
What were you crying for?
I just wanted to kill myself. I wasn't happy in life. I wasn't really getting on with my ma. My cousin had just died. Terrible state of mind. Doing drugs, steroids. It was a recipe for disaster. Mm. So it was actually the Halloween after me. So September, John died. The Halloween, then the October. I'd done drugs. I'd done coke. And I remember I was sitting there around my head on the couch at a party, and I said to myself, what the fuck am I doing this for? I says, my cousin's lying in a grave and I'm risking my life down drugs. And that was the last time I ever done drugs, 2017. I was like, I'm not doing anymore. And I said to the lads, and the thing is, when my mates start, you couldn't get a better bunch of lads, like,
good.
I said to them, I ran into the WhatsApp group, I said, lads, look, I'm never doing drugs again. Don't fucking offer me any on nights out. And I promise you, no one has ever offered me. It would randomers have, obviously, yeah. But like me mates have never ever, like,
because this is the big thing, and this is what we talk about. I talked about it with David O'Gorman and Carl Clinch, that your friends can sometimes be
the influence.
Yeah,
and I know a lot of that. Mm. I actually know Carl as well. Carl's a very nice bloke, and I'm happy to see him. Mm. Like he's doing well for himself, and he has a good little missus there as well, by the looks of things, and I'm happy for him, but. Yeah, I do know other people, like other group of friends, that they just they have bad influences on their friends. And there's one group in particular, I know someone is struggling in that group, and the friends just keep bringing that person out. And I'm like, what are you doing? You're like, that's not what you should do with your friend. Like, don't bring him out in the fucking drugs. Like,
someone else told me a big thing was that someone had a gambling issue.
Mm.
And the lads in the WhatsApp group were throwing bets in and throwing tips in.
Yeah.
And someone just said, lads, can we fucking stop?
Yeah.
Stop putting the tips into the fucking WhatsApp group where he is.
Yeah.
And I don't think they all realised then, only when someone spoke up and said, and like your mum was like, it's grand, it's all right. And they were like, no, it's not all right. Don't be putting tips into the group. Yeah. So you're very lucky.
No, I am. And I think my friends are very like switched on. A few of them have businesses and they're involved in cryptocurrency and all. They're doing really well for themselves, like financially. And my friends are just very switched on. And I think, like, saying something like that, they knew how bad I was as well. There was times I'd just be sitting on the chair and I'd be bawling. I only said to my best friend the other day, I was like, do you reckon I've cried more times than anyone else, you know? Like, in front of you. And he says, yeah, probably.
Can I ask you about your mum and dad and the splitting up? When did that happen?
So it was not too long after I moved back from Wales.
Okay.
I think they had a bad argument and wasn't talking for a few weeks. And then one day my dad just says, I think it was my dad that says, when I come back from work, I'm taking my stuff and going. And then, they were broke up then.
How did that affect you?
It's weird because I sort of, after they broke up, it was sort of like, I always sort of knew that, but I just never really did know it, you know what I mean? I seen how the relationship was. They were obviously good at times, and then at probably the majority of the time they were just, I wasn't...
They weren't
just,
happy?
Yeah, just, they weren't glowing, you know what I mean? They wasn't glowing together, so...
Did it make you angry when this blew up?
It was just, there was a few things that I found hard. I don't know if I had much anger in me, but... yeah, that just a few things, like, I wasn't seeing my dad as much. I was still close to him, even to this day. He's actually came back from Lanzarote last night, so he's going to come over to mine for some field with me and Casey on Sunday. So I'm still very close to my dad, and even me ma, like, I love me ma, the bones of me ma. But, yeah, there was just a lot. So they broke up, and I think after they broke up, me mom sort of, she went through a bad patch. She was, like, drinking quite heavily, and I think she went, she, like, that was very hard. It was like a dark cloud over the house the whole time, and that really affected me. That really, really affected me. And, like, I'm not a big drinker.
Mm.
Even me missus, she always says, she tries to pull it on me. She's like, let yourself loose a little bit. And I'm like, I just can't. It's like, I'm turned off drink. Just because I can see what I can do, you know what I mean? And yeah, so she went through a bad patch. And then I remember she met someone else then as well. And I remember there was one day in particular. So we'd fight that much, me and me ma, because I'd always be the one to call her out. I'd see her going off the Littles and coming back and hiding a bottle of vodka in her jacket or something, and I'd call her out. And I sort of took, because my other three brothers at the time, they were all younger, and I was naturally the person who spoke up more, I sort of took it all, and I did feel as if I held the weight of that house on me shoulders. And but I noticed, I learned how to deal with me ma. So me ma always, because she suffers quite badly with depression herself, and I always knew that she went through these stages. So she'd go through anger stage, she'd be drinking, go through anger stage, and then she'll get upset. And when she got upset, then I'd always go into her, and I'd sit on the bed with her, and I'd be like, "Ma, what's wrong with you? Come here, like, open up, what's wrong with you?" And she'd bawl her eyes out, and she'd tell me what's wrong with her, and she'd be like, "Oh, I'm just fed up. Nothing to look forward to, no money, no this, all the bills and all the rest." And she'd open up to me, and that's me and my ma, like that, like, very close like that. But I'd always know, when she gets upset, then, like, when I chat to her on the bed, I'd say, "Right, ma, come on, let's pull yourself up out of this now. Me and the boys need you back in the house, like, we just need you around, like, just, it's just like me and the boys living in the house now, you're just in your room all the time." And then she'd cop on for a couple of weeks. She'd be great. And then she'd hit flat spot again, back to normal. And I learned how to deal with me ma.
Yeah, but you shouldn't have to.
Yeah, that's the thing. Yeah, but, like, my ma, like, I can see, like, my ma has been with me dad since probably 20 plus years, you know what I mean, at the time. And she's had her own, like, few little bits and bobs that have four down and stuff like that. And I don't know, it's just people's coping mechanisms, isn't it?
I know, I get it. Like, it's very hard to be, and I think as women, we have fears of how we're going to manage without the husband. How are we going to manage the household without the husband? How are we going to, and I don't know what at all, but I think that is, it's fear. And then obviously then, you have resentment, as in she's like, "Well, he's fucking off and leaving me here with three boys."
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? So I get it. But, like, I never spoke about it before. My brother's down in Quimera right now. He's on week 7 from Monday, which I'm delighted for him. But I was the one who ran around and did everything for him and all. But I shouldn't have had to.
Yeah.
But we loved them.
No, absolutely.
We loved them with all our hearts.
Do it all again as well.
Yeah, and we would do it all again. And we'll keep doing it. Do you know what I mean? But it's just that we shouldn't have to.
Yeah. No.
Do you and her ever go to counselling together?
No.
Probably should.
Yeah, I think, well, she's been to counselling, I think, in the past. Like, well, when I say counselling, I think she's done one or two sessions and she never liked it. She just said that the person didn't know her, didn't get her, and just didn't really say much back in the counselling session and stuff. And I always had that. That's why I probably didn't go to counselling, because I always said to myself, I'll open up to the lads, I'd cry in front of anyone, I'd tell anyone anything that's on my mind. So why would I go to someone, pay for someone that I can get it with the lads, I can get it with me ma, I can get it with my girlfriend. But it was only when I did start going to counselling that I realised that, well, my counsellor anyway, she was great. She lives out in Meath, and she has like a couple of goats and horses and stuff, and she was just friendly from the get-go, and went in, sat down, opened up to her. And not only does, so obviously I'm opening up and telling her what's wrong with me, what's on my mind, how I feel, but she educated me on she's been educating me on how the brain works, how trauma affects the brain, the nervous system, how the both sides of the brains work and everything. She's been very educational.
Mm-hmm.
She actually told me to do the hot box sauna. Have you ever heard of it?
No.
So the hot box sauna, I think that's based out in Meath as well. It's like a sauna. It's like a little shed. You get in the shed, stay in there for 5 to 7 minutes, roast yourself, and then you hop out and jump straight into the Boyne River.
Okay.
So it's a hot and cold plunge. And she told me that, she said that that's very good for helping reset your nervous system, and it's good for countering trauma. And I went and done that then last Tuesday, I think it was.
Okay, how'd it go?
It was brilliant.
Yeah.
I'd recommend it to anyone. Mm. Hotbox sauna. It's so I can't swim and I have a fear of water. And obviously, so if that had happened to me, what happened to my brother, they would have said, oh, he drowned.
Mm.
But because my brother could swim, that's why the question is, like, we don't know what happened to him. But I brought one of my friends down with me, and I said, John, come here, look, like, make me get in this water. I says, like, I'm gonna be a little
baby
about it.
Yeah.
And so we went in, done 5 to 7 minutes in the sauna, and we are sweating buckets. Couldn't even like sit up against the wall around because it's like an oven. And he said to me, right, we go out. And he says, all right, come on then. Walked out, walked straight. I walked probably nearly hip height into the water. And he dunked down into the water. He plunged into the water. Mm. And then he came back up and he's like, right, come on, do it. And I couldn't do it. I was like, I could see tadpoles and stuff in the water. And the fact that I can't swim, terrified of water, tadpoles, everything, cold, freezing cold. I was like, I can't do it. I was standing there, I can't do it. And he said, who are you doing it for? And I told him I wanted to do it for my brother, like, and then I literally went straight down, came back up, had a busted nose. And just, it must have been a shock to the system. My nose, like, pissing blood.
But, isn't it mad? Because that's all your trauma.
Yeah.
Your trauma just came out of your nose.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking. Yeah.
Like, everything just came out of your nose.
Mm.
Like, it is absolutely bonkers what happens to us and what we do in life and how things help. And it is, it's crazy. But that was just your trauma coming out of your nose.
It actually happened to me the first two dunks that I done.
Mm.
And then, so when I came up, my friend was in bits laughing. I was like, he was like, your nose is bleeding, Gibbo. And I went like that. And yeah, my nose, it was proper bleeding, like. Then second time happened again, and after that then it was grand. But I swear to God, we finished up, so it was an hour long. You do 5 to 7 minutes, then a plunge, and keep doing it, keep repeating. And we walked out, we came out afterwards, and I never felt cleaner inside or outside. I swear to God, it was something very nice about it.
It's magical.
Yeah, it really was.
It is magical when things like that happen to you.
That was an amazing experience, and we're going to do it again now in the next week or two. So.
God, a hot box on. I'll have to tag them and make sure that people do that. How is your mum?
She's good now. So I think not long after John died, when I was going through, obviously, probably the worst of my mental health, I pulled her up one of the days, and I'm not sure if she even knows this, but I pulled her up one of the days. I says, Mark, come here, look, you need to cop on, you need to... Like, if you don't stop drinking spirits and stuff, and, like, if things don't improve, I says, you're gonna be down the sun, which is, like, ironic now, but I says, you're going to be down the sun, man. I says, I can't mentally handle it. I'm, like, between John, you, everything, everything else I'm unhappy with in life, I says, I'm not going to be here, man. And I swear to God, I don't think she even knows this, but since that conversation, she's never drank a spirit. And
she knew you needed her. You needed your ma.
Yeah, I mean, my ma's great. Yeah. She just has a couple of issues herself, and but she does drink some cans. Mm. Do you know what I mean? But like she has a few cans and stuff. But she's a lot more chill. She's not she she just went through a bad period where she was drinking, and she's a lot better now. And I think after my brother as well, she found that very hard. Not long after that, then I moved out. So there was only one brother left, and then her and her boyfriend in the house. And she only told me the other day, went up to visit her, and she was like, make sure you drop in more. She's like, even if you're passing, drop in for 5 minutes. She's like, when you left the house, there was a big shock. Because I was always like the man of the house, you know what I mean? Mm. I never happened in around the house. So I would have been stepping up. I'd have been, even anything, my ma needed help, anything.
Did you realise that when you were leaving, and was it a struggle in your mind that you were going to go, or did you realise, I have to start living for me?
Yeah, no, I think I was ready to move out. Me and my missus were seeing each other for probably well over a year at a time. I think we needed our own space. And then, yeah, I think just like, I'm 30 now, do you know what I mean? I wanted my own presses full of my own food and my own space, my own everything. And then, yeah, it was well needed. But I actually cried the first night I moved into the apartment, because I had actually had an argument with my ma and wasn't talking to her while I moved my stuff out. And so I was a bit upset about that. And then even my brother Rob, because 2016, my brother Eamon moved in with Jessie, his girlfriend. And then Rob had a room by himself, and then me and Lee were in a room. And me ma says, oh, Rob, like, you move in with Lee, Daryl's older, give him his own room. And Rob, like, he used to call me the privileged child. He says, oh, ma, you gave him my room. He was the privileged child. And then when I did start applying for apartments, I said to Rob, he says, do you know what? You're going to get the room back. I says, I'm moving now. I should be moving now soon enough. I says, you get your room back. And, yeah, he never got to get his room back. So that was hard for me. So I think that's the first night. I literally cried like a baby the first night. I was like, you know, when you're like jumping up and down, like, oh. I was like that.
Crying. Ugly crying.
Yeah.
Full on
emotions. In my girlfriend's arms. She was like, what are you crying for? Is it because of Rob? I says, yeah.
Tell me about your girlfriend.
Ah, she's great. She's. So my brother, Eamon, and Jesse are going out with each other since they're 16. And Jesse is Casey's sister. So okay. It's two brothers going out with two sisters. And I always knew of Casey, but I just never actually met her. And, well, I actually did meet her once at Deb's. I think it was at Jesse's Deb's. I met her once, but she had a boyfriend at the time. She had a long-term boyfriend. And then lockdown came. Then Ramadan?
Yeah.
Ramadan.
She was living abroad.
She was living in Dubai.
Okay.
So she came back. She was singing over there, and then she came back. She was only meant to come back for 3-4 weeks, and then, yeah, she came to a barbecue at my mum's back, and we just clicked. And I sort of always knew. It's weird, because Casey, if you've seen the picture of the two, it was like, Casey's like, she's naturally stunning. And she was, I always used to say, like, there's no way I'd ever pull her. But it's weird, because I used to always say to Jesse, like, is Casey still with her boyfriend and stuff? And she'd be like, no, I think they actually broke up. And I always used to, I'd be like, I know for a fact if I was ever around her, I'd make her laugh and I'd win her over. And that actually happened.
Mm-hmm.
We clicked, straight away we clicked. And she's been great ever since. Even through Rob, after Rob died, the day I found out Rob died, she came up to me and I said to her, Casey, like, I'm going to be emotionally unavailable to you for I don't know how long. And she says, you just do whatever you need to do. I'll be here. And she literally, the whole week of the funeral, she was running around doing everything. She went and got me my funeral clothes, her and Jesse and her ma. And they done everything. They organised a lot of things. And she's just great. Yeah, I'll marry her definitely.
Will you?
One day, yeah.
Keep her to hear now, Casey.
Yeah. She keeps being on to me about, she's like, oh, when are we going to have baby? When are you going to ask me to marry you?
Mm-hmm.
But she know, like, the two of us know, do you know what I mean? We click so well, and yeah, I can't really imagine. No one would handle me. I swear to God, I'm just a big baby half the time, and I'm very confident no one else would handle me, because I'm hard work.
But that'll all change when she does get pregnant.
Yeah. I look forward. I can't wait to have kids.
That'll all change. So tell me now, you're in counselling and what? How are you going to keep going? Like, how are you going to keep going?
So the counsellor actually told me that it's weird because she sort of described the situation without me even telling her about it. So the first session then, like I said, she was educating. She asked me a few questions, told her about my brother, told her about John, and she started educating me about how one side of the brain is mostly for thoughts, the other side sends. So that brain tells the other side of the brain to send signals down to your body that cause you to tense up. Angry, anxious, nervousness, all them emotions. And she was just educating me, and then she told me that, now I'd probably butcher it compared to how she explains it now, but she almost said that, yeah, with trauma it'll affect me more in the long run if I don't focus on fixing it now. So she said it'll happen where, say, like, I could be, when I'm older, say even when I have grandkids, mm-hmm. or kids even, she said that I'll go into a destructive mode where I'm cold, not feeling, like I said, emotions. Yeah. My relationships with friends, family, even girlfriend will start declining. I'll be angrier, could probably even take up addiction. Mm-hmm. And I actually said to her, I wouldn't take up addiction. Like the most I'll do was probably smoke, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. I wouldn't be drinking, I won't do drugs. I'll never be an alcoholic, never be addicted to drugs. And she was like, really, yeah? She was like, I wouldn't bet against you. And I was like, I'd bet on me.
Mm.
I'd bet on me that I'd never do any of that stuff. And she was like, I don't think she was like taking a dig at me. I think she was just trying to make me realise that this is what does happen.
Mm.
And I think counselling at the minute is just very good for me. I've been feeling great now since I started doing counselling. It's just something about it. I think I enjoy the chat. I look forward to going to her. When I'm leaving, I wish I could stay there longer. It's great, it is. And then, yeah, back in the gym, just trying to get stronger, trying to get in better shape. Just, I think as well with myself, I think I almost feel as if your brain is like a bicep. You need to constantly do reps. So I'm always trying to, because I'm so locked into my brain a lot of the time, I always try. So say for example, I'll try teach myself to not be like, here an example, say so snappy. I'll say to myself don't try be not so snappy. Even like sometimes I'd be a little bit snappy with Casey, and I told the counselor that, and she was like, look, you've went through trauma, your emotions are all over the place. And sometimes I'm a little bit like, I'll be making Casey laugh 1 minute.
Mm.
Walk up to the fridge and she'll say something. And then I'll be like, what are you saying that for? Blah, blah, blah. You get snappy. Mm. But I think with a brain, you sort of almost have to keep
trying it.
Yeah, keep like repetition in your brain to try change. You know what I mean? Like, I think I'm very in tune. Like I was saying to you, I'm very in tune with myself. I think that I won't let it get to a stage where my brain is overpowering me.
Mm.
But
that's what you have to do. You just have to keep telling yourself, and the more you do tell yourself, those things will happen. What do you think Robert would want for you?
He'd want happiness. Oh, absolutely. He was I'd probably say the most genuine person that I would have had in my life. Even like my brothers and stuff, that we all have each other's backs, love everyone to bits. But Rob was the most genuine bloke. He'd have bleeding done anything for you. He'd have jumped in a fire for you. And I think he'd have wanted me to. That's what happens a lot. Like, a lot of the time I'm upset is because I think at times where I never told him I loved him.
He knew.
Yeah, there was one image in particular. So we had a little mess for you in the kitchen. This was probably only about 2-3 years ago. We had a little mess fight in the kitchen. And I sort of lost my temper a bit with him. And I can't remember what happened. If I had him in a headlock or whatever it was, I squeezed really tight. And I was like, fucking, I was cursing him. I was like, you're bleeding, blah, blah, blah. And then I let go of him. And I remember he was on the ground. He had a pair of glasses. He wore glasses, so his glasses were on the ground. And I remember he picked the glasses up off the ground, and I was standing at the kitchen door looking at him, and I seen him pick up his glasses, put them back on him, and he looked so vulnerable. And I remember I went upstairs to me room after that, and I cried my eyes out, and I was like, what the fuck am I doing? I was like, I'm after...
Oh, Jesus, a board is at the hitting...
Oh, my God.
...my window.
Jesus.
Oh, my God. That has never happened
that
in 3 years. That
I thought someone threw something at the window there.
Oh, my God, he's at the hitting that window.
A little magpie coming down to check on him.
That has never happened in my life.
It's crazy.
Oh, God, I'll have to make sure it's okay.
Yeah.
Jeez, it's never happened. There's your brother. There now. Sending us a message. That's... I firmly believe in that kind of stuff.
Yeah,
like that. I'm living here 3 years and that has never happened to me in my life. Oh, God, we'll have to check on the board now.
That's nuts. Is he moving?
I don't know. God, let me just check. Hang on. Sorry for this interruption. Oh, God, I hope so. But that's what brothers did.
Mm-hmm.
So brothers behaved like that.
Yeah. That messed me up, that image. I promise you, when I seen that image, it was weird, because I went up to my room and I did say to myself...
But you know, that's like your brother letting you know that was okay. Yeah,
that's the type of thing he'd find that funny. So, like...
But he's letting you know, like, that was okay.
Yeah.
Like, you were talking about that's something that you hold in your head.
Yeah, it's mad.
All the time. But go on, sorry.
That's, if he was to throw a sign at us... That'd be the sign he would throw us, a board going into the window. But now after I seen that image, I went up to my room, and I remember thinking to myself, if that never happened to him, I'll replay that image in my head. And it was only... I was probably only in my apartment like 2 weeks, and I was going to bed every night, and I kept replaying that image in my head. And it was messing me up. It was really messing me up to a point where... I felt like smashing my bedroom up.
Don't.
I know, no, I wouldn't, because even me missus, like, she'd be out watching telly and I'd be in my room, and I was lying in bed and I was thinking of it. I was like, I can still remember the image so clearly of how he looked. He looked so, just so innocent and helpless, like, just, yeah, just vulnerable. And I kept replaying in my head, and I was tossing and torn and couldn't sleep for an hour or two, just constantly thinking. It was a weird feeling. And I remember I kept saying to myself, just get up, go out to Casey, tell her. And I couldn't. I says, if I tell her, I'm going to bawl my eyes out. I just didn't want to cry. It's not that I wouldn't cry in front of her, so I didn't want to cry. And then, yeah, I think as the time went on then, that lasted probably a week, say a week of nights where I was going to bed and my head was messed up over it. And then, I think I sort of fizzled out then, and I was saying that to the counsellor. The counsellor said, look, he's our brothers, that's what he's doing.
That's what you do.
He's fight with each other and he's fight for each other.
But that's him telling you never to, and if you do get that image in your head again, to train your brain
to think of that. Yeah, that's what that is,
So that's what's happening there. Oh my God. Yeah. Well, come here. On that note, we leave it there. Daryl, thanks so much
for
sharing your story.
Thanks.
I'm very, very sorry about your cousin John and about Robert. I'm really, really sorry.
I appreciate that. And thanks very much for having me. It was a very good opportunity.
Good.
So I really enjoyed it.
Good.
Thank you.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more, with Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to Quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.